to the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room Podcast. We are here to podcast about anything and everything Star Wars with you. Please visit our website where you can play current and past episodes. That's https://rabr.kylejohansson.us. That's rabr.kylejohansson.us. On the left-hand side is a navigation menu. You can use this to learn how to load the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room podcast on your Android or Apple phone and tablet. And we have direct links to our podcast on Apple and Google Podcast. Please participate by connecting to our social media, answering questions of the week, or submitting feedback directly from the site. Again, all of these are available at the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room website at rabr.kylejohansson.us. And now, it's time to talk Star Wars! I am Kyle John Johansson, and this is Andrew Scott Sutton. Say hello! Blah, blah, blah. Today we're reviewing Star Wars prequel movie, The Phantom Menace. And we've got a couple news segments, and we've got a couple... So I've got two news clips today, one I didn't share with you.
It's time for the news.
The first one is called Star Wars Tales of the Jedi Explained. So there's a new series that they're developing called Tales of the Jedi.
Animated.
Yes, it's animated. And it happens 4,000 years before New Hope. So this is back, basically it says it's back in the time when the Jedi and Sith were, there was lots of each, and they were fighting each other. So this is 4,000 years before any of the movies. It's supposed to be like a series, kind of like what we saw, in Clone Wars, just episode after episode. It's an anthology series focused on different characters and conflicts in the Old Republic era.
These are all new characters then.
Yes, we don't know any of these guys.
That's awesome.
Series is largely about the rise and fall of Ukulik Quill Dorma, a Jedi Knight from Alderaan, who becomes corrupt by the dark side. Over the course of the series, battles with the Sith, falls in love with a Jedi, Nomi, so we see romantic things going on with Jedi. Former Jedi turns to the dark side. This is created by someone else, blah, blah, blah. Tales of the Jedi has proved to be a hugely influential franchise for establishing key points of the Sith and Jedi mythology. So we're going to get a lot about mythology. Knights of the Republic...
if it's 4,000 years, that's even before Yoda, obviously, because Yoda was 900 years old.
Yeah, so the animated series there's currently not much known about it except for there's been writings about it and stuff, and some of it was in Visions. Some of the ideas were in Vision, the Star Wars Vision show. So a little bit of it is in there too, but there's a lot of comics about this show. It's possible the series might cast a wider net. Show might focus on established Jedi. Anyway,
So there's quite a bit going on there. It's a new series. It's being developed. It's got a huge panel at the celebration that's on, it says on May 28th. The big Star Wars event. So we're going to see a lot of news about it then.
That beer.
No.
Power drink.
Yeah.
Awesome. Nice.
I needed. I was tired. I went to the store already. And then the next news article I've got is about the Star Wars galaxy, the entire galaxy. So this is very detailed, and I'm not going to go into all of it because it talks about every significant moment that happened in the galaxy. And I don't really want to talk about it, but I want to talk more about a few things. So it says here, here's a definition of what they consider the galaxy. It has trillions of there's trillions of galaxies in the universe. The galaxy is vast and is a composite over 400 billion stars with 3.2 billion habitable systems orbiting around a supermassive black hole at the middle of the galaxy. The four galaxy arms rotate around this black hole, which is about 120,000 light years wide, the black hole is. The galaxy serves as a setting for trading, politics, and war throughout the history. And, you know, we get the Galactic Republic, the Galactic Empire, the New Republic. And there's a lot of Force-sensitive stuff. So, like I said, galaxy, blah, blah, blah. During the reign of the Galactic Empire, several sectors were ruled by a Grand Moff. And it lists a couple of them that were part of it. There's a standard galactic grid was used to locate a galactic point on the coordinates. So they built out basically a 3D map, a 3D grid of the galaxy. And these are the different sections. It's called the Deep Core, the Core Worlds, Colonies, Inner Rim Territories, Expansion Region, Mid-Rim Territories, and Outer Rim Territories. And then there's the Unknown Regions. And I'm going to kind of explain what's in all those that we might know about. Deep Core is the innermost section. Densely packed with stars and nebula. But it's dangerous to navigate, relatively few explorers have ever been inside there. Partly because that's, you know, the deep core is near the black hole. So it's dangerous to go in there because you can get sucked into the black hole if you get too close. Then there's the core worlds.
Does that mean like mining and stuff?
No, these are the main planets of the galaxy, the ruling planets, let's say. So there, it has here listed, it's densely inhabited and located in the strategic end of several major trade lanes, you know, fashion hub, education, financial, technology. It's where many of the human species began. And it has planets that we know about. They're called Coruscant, which is, you know, the capital. Corellia, which is where they make the Corellian freighters, which, you know, that's the Millennium Falcon. There's Kuat, which is a financial planet. And Hossein Prime, which they talk about. An attack on the core worlds is inconceivable because they're too well fortified and there's, you know, the population and all that stuff's too big. So there's colonies. The colonies consist of worlds colonized by the core. Planets are part of major trade routes and extremely wealthy. And they include Anduin, Katnu, and Karda. I've never heard of those, but maybe Karda, yeah. Inner Rim planets were settled, served as a frontier for the galactic civilizations for centuries. So it's, you know, it's like a, you know, when in the United States, when we always had to go west, that was that kind of thing. And there's Onderon is one of the planets, and that was a planet that was Onderon. Oh, with an O.
Oh.
And I think Onderon was one of those planets that got blown up by one of the Death Stars.
I thought it was Alderaan.
There was also, yeah, that was the planet that Princess Leia was on that got blown up, remember? I think like the second Death Star maybe was Onderon. They were in the Onderon system or something like that. Expansive regions contain many new colonies. Notable planets include Umbra. There's a lot of mining. I think we've seen heard of Umbra in one of the animated shows. The Midrim territories include Naboo, Malastare, Kashyyyki, which is the Wookiee planet.
Yeah.
Ord Mantle is there, which, you know, what we see in the Bad Batch. And there's several of them. There's probably about 10 different planets there. Those are just the ones I recognize. Midrim is considered lawfully under the Galactic Republic and the Empire. Outer Rim territories is the largest region in the galaxy. It's, you know, basically the Empire doesn't have a reach, and also the Trade Republic doesn't have a reach out there. But it's a lot of it's ruled by the Hutts and the Pikes, and we've heard of Black Sun before. That's a gang for
Black
a while.
Sun or Red?
Black Sun. Black Sun was actually a gang that was run by Maul, and then he took over Crimson Dawn later on.
That's it, Crimson Dawn.
So the planets in the Outer Rim.
They need a movie about Crimson Dawn.
Yeah, well, there's supposed to be one. I think, from what I heard, there's supposed to be a Crimson Rain is a series of books that's out, and they're supposed to be developing something on Disney Plus for it, I believe. Nothing's official about it, but it's
she gonna run it?
I don't know. Because they're supposed to talk about it at the convention this, and you know, around the 28th or whatever. There's a panel about it, so they're probably going to announce a bunch of stuff.
Oh, that'd be cool.
But we don't know hardly anything about it. So the planets in the Outer Rim are Kessel, Ryloth.
Yeah. The Kessel Run.
Exactly. Geonosis, Mustafar,
yeah.
Crate. There's a Hutt planet. There's Endor. Dagobah, which is where Yoda was. Lothal, Hoth. Hoth is where like the rebels were for a while. Yavin 4 is there, which is where we get the beginning of Star Wars timeline. Battle of Yavin 4. Seleucromai, Seraph, which is where Rogue One took place on. That planet was called Seraph. Where the plans were.
Yeah.
There's Darthamor and Tatooine is all part of the Outer Rim. So Tatooine's an Outer Rim planet.
So half, if not all, of the Star Wars movie takes place in the Outer Rim.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because that's where the excitement is, I guess. I don't know. the Clone Wars, a lot of it takes place, you know, on Coruscant or whatever that is. That's where the Jedi Temple is, the main temple. Mm-hmm. So then there's the Outer Rim, or I'm sorry, Unknown Regions, which there's not much known about at all either. There's some sort of anomalies in Unknown Regions that cause hyperspace not to work well. Something about magnetic and gravity wells and stuff like that. But it says the Chiss live in the Unknown Regions, which is, you know, Admiral Thrawn that I keep talking to you about. He's a Chiss. Exegol is in the Unknown Regions, which we know is, you know, where we went to in the last movie of the final trilogy, the Skywalker, whatever, Return of Skywalker, whatever it was. There's a planet called Achutu, which we've seen in some of the... Yeah, exactly. We've seen that in some of the... I think that was in the Rebels. And then there's another region called Wild Space.
What?
Yeah.
Is Will Smith there?
Yeah. No, it's Wild, not Will Space. Wild.
That's what I said. Wild Wild West.
Oh, I get
it. Come on.
Okay. I forgot.
Follow me.
And the Wild Space regions are the regions that go around the entire galaxy. It's the outer edge of the galaxy. And it's called partly because of that, because if you try to escape the galaxy, there's a huge, disturbance that you have to go through. Anyway, this article, actually, this is a very good article. I don't know if you read any of it, Scott, but it's got, you know, from the beginning of when propulsion and hyperdrive was started, it's got when, you know, the Jedi started 25,000 years ago or whatever, when they became official. It's got multiple battles between the Sith and the Jedi, and, you know, Jedi taking over. It's got some information about the Clone Wars, the Galactic Empire. It's pretty much a history of the entire galaxy. Mm-hmm. And we've seen quite a lot of it, but
how many pages is it?
It's a lot. It's probably like 10 pages or more. It's quite.
I'll print it out. Send it to my work email.
Okay. So most of what we know happened 25,000 years after the galaxy supposedly started keeping track of stuff, when they got hyperdrive. 25,000 years after is when, you know, the Phantom Menace and everything started. So this goes through all of it. I mean, it goes through,
right,
you know, like I said, it says this is when hyperdrive was first started. This is when, you know, the Old Republic was first started.
Does it mention Mr. Spock and Captain Kirk?
Yeah. No. See, we're supposed to think this is a different galaxy, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
definitely have to have Scotty in there if it's a hyperdrive.
Maybe.
I'm sorry. Maybe. I'm just gonna piss our listeners off.
It's not that long, I guess. It's probably like maybe 6 or 8 pages long, but yeah, it's pretty detailed. Like I said, I'm not gonna go into all of it. I just wanted to kinda
Kinda
go through the different areas that are in the galaxy. It has a map on here too. That's kind of hard to read, but I think like Mandalore is one of the core planets. Mandalore. Mandalore's been around forever. It talks about Mandalore in here in the beginning, because there's been several wars with the Mandalorians, the Mandalore system or whatever. Because at one point they tried to take over the galaxy and rule the galaxy themselves.
Yeah.
But anyway, So that's quite a bit there.
The news. Are you planning your next trip to Tatooine? Well, come on down to Pelly's Mod and Repair Shop, where our droids will spruce up your wagon. We'll service just about anything from Starfighter Corellian Y-1300 freighter to a Vespa hovering scooter. If we don't have the part, we can get it. If you qualify for our special program, we'll provide you with any part our Jawas can get. Well, that's right. Come on down to Pelly's Mod and Repair Shop, where we can store fuel and upgrade your vessel. We're located at Tatooine's Mos Eisley Spaceport, Hangar 35.
Spoiler alert. Danger, you're about to be spoiled. This is your spoiler alert. We're about to talk candidly and explicitly about some TV shows or movies. If you have not watched them, please fast forward to the appropriate section. You will not be warned again, because you will be spoiled.
Feedback. Star Wars The Phantom Menace was released on May 19th, 1999. It was re-released in 2012 in 3D and digital HD.
Added stuff like animals walking around.
Right. Exactly. So the original runtime of the first release was 133 minutes, and the re-release stuff and the DVDs were 136 minutes. So they added three minutes of new stuff, which is in a movie. You got to think about that. It's actually quite a bit. I could tell
when I watched The New Hope, they added stuff too.
Yeah. There's a little bit there. They added the original ending.
They added animals.
Yeah.
When you went into town on the.
There's a little bit that, but they added a different ending too. Anyway, so the budget for this movie was $115 million. And it takes place 32 years before the Battle of Yavin, which is, you know, the Death Star, first Death Star being blown up in New Hope. So it's 32 years before New Hope. Okay. It was written and directed, of course, by George Lucas, produced by Rick McCallum, starred Liam Neeson, Ewan McGregor, Natalie Portman, Jake Lloyd, and Ian McDermott. And this is the first part of the prequel trilogy. Actually, the fourth movie released, Star Wars movie released, because the second trilogy was first. Like I said, 1999. The movie grossed over $924 million worldwide.
He made his money back.
Yeah, 115 to start with and made 924. It says it's unadjusted for inflation. Like I said, it was re-released on Blu-ray and DVD in 2012 and theaters in 3D and digital HD. The taxation of trade routes to outlying star system is in dispute. Hoping to resolve the matter with a blockade of deadly battleships, the greedy trade federation has stopped all shipping to the small planet of Naboo, while the Congress of the Republic endlessly debates this alarming chain of events. Supreme Chancellor has secretly dispatched two Jedi Knights to the two Jedi Knights, the Guardians of Peace and Justice, to settle the conflict. Okay, and you have to remember, Supreme Chancellor is not Palpatine, so I wanted to remember that because we talk about it here in just a second. So, and then of course we go into the movie. It says here the blockade is on the mid-rim planet of Naboo. So Supreme Leader Chancellor Fennis Valorum is the leader of the Galactic Senate, and he's dispatched Master Qui-Gon Jinn and his Padawan Obi-Wan Kenobi to serve as the ambassadors to the flagship. They're sent to meet Viceroy Newt Gunray to resolve the dispute. The Trade Federation is in league with the mysterious Darth Sidious, the Dark Lord of the Sith, who secretly orders Gunray to invade Naboo and kill the two Jedi upon their arrival. When Gunray asks if it's legal, Sidious says that he will make sure that it is. Okay, so the Viceroy locks the Jedi into a meeting room and attempts to kill them with poison gas while having their ship destroyed. And it's called, they call it a Radiant 8, Radiant 8 destroyer. But they escape and battle through a squad of droids. Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi Kenobi make their way to the command deck where Gunray is located. And they've, you know, got the blast doors closed. But the Jedi, you see Qui-Gon uses lightsaber to, you know, try to cut the door open. And they send two of those destroyer droids, those ones that roll. I like to call them Rollies. I like to call them Rollies. Yeah. They're called droid Kias or something, droidicas. But I like to call them Rolly droids.
Kias.
Yeah, that's what they're actually officially called. Droidicas, something like that. I don't know. And we see on the deck where Gunray's at, he gets a video call from Queen Amidala, and to express her disapproval of about the blockade. And she mentions that there's supposed to be some ambassadors coming from the Chancellor. And this is where Gunray says he has no idea. He's never seen any ambassadors. Of course, we know that he's already talked to him and they're already trying to break in. And meanwhile, the Queen also speaks with Senator Shiv Palpatine regarding the recent attempt on negotiations and how Gunray says they didn't receive the ambassadors. Palpatine states that that his ambassadors did arrive and he's unable to finish his sentence because a hologram flickers. His hologram flickers out for some reason. And that's because the Trade Federation is blocking communications. And we see back on the planet's surface, Qui-Gon Jinn has escaped through one of the ships that's invading the planet. He gets out and they're, running along and he runs into Jar Jar Binks. Oh no. Your favorite character.
What's my doggy's name?
Jar Jar?
No. It's Zozo Binks.
Well.
Yeah, right. He's clumsy.
That's funny. So he runs into Jar Jar and basically saves him. Kenobi.
Oh, he's indebted to him.
Right. He's indebted to him. Kenobi shows up as they're fighting off some patrols or whatever. And they mentioned that they need to find a way to get to the, you know, safety or whatever. And Jar Jar mentions that, he has a route through the water to, you know, at least hide from whatever and talk to somebody about it or whatever. Capital, the Trade Federation has occupied the planet in Naboo. And the Jedi meets with Boss Nass underwater now. He asks them to help out the Naboo, but Nass refuses and sends them. He sends them off on some sort of Bongo submarine. We see them go through. They're supposed to be making a trip through the inner core of the planet, because this planet doesn't have, you know, a hot center core. It has just a bunch of caves in the center and water. Yeah. So they travel through the planet to the other side, where you know, the queen and all the Naboo people are being held. They attempt her. Wake up. Who?
Break on through their side.
Yeah. Break on through.
That was a fun trip too.
Yeah, there's
what was it? One of the lines. One of the lines said, "Oh, there's always a bigger fish."
Yeah,
or something like that.
They got attacked by a big fish, and then another bigger fish came.
Fish got
that happened like twice or something, didn't it?
Yeah. One was an eel, and then the eel got taken out by a shark like thing. Yeah.
Pinned myself, and now I can't unpin it.
Jar Jar just a comic group.
Yeah, that's pretty much. So they arrive with Binks in tow. They arrive and rescue the queen from a group of Trade Republic guys that are, you know, marching her somewhere. And they go on to a hangar. Yeah, there you go. A hangar deck, and rescue some pilots that are being detained, and they all escape on a big ship that's that they try to get off through the blockade.
Is this where they introduce the shiny ship?
Yes. This is the first time we see the shiny ship. No, that's. I always thought it was kind of out of place, but whatever.
Yeah, but it can shift. It can shift to a pointy ship or a wide ship.
No. That's just an optical illusion.
No,
It doesn't shift.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't. So they leave Coruscant. They depart for Coruscant. That's what it is. And as they're leaving and going through the blockade, they get attacked a little bit, and they get some droids go out and try to repair some of the problems on the ship. And one of them, they all seem to get picked off the top of the ship, except for one. And he fixes the hyperdrive, lets him.
That would be R2-D2.
Yeah, that lets him get back into, shoot into hyperspace so they can escape. Yeah, RTD2 repairs it. But they get, once they get into, you know, escape, they realize that the hyperdrive is slowly leaking and they're not going to last very long. They need a replacement or a fix for it. And they determined that Tatooine is a good planet to land on because it's kind of out of the way. It's not under control of the Trade Republic or the Senate or the anything like that. They're kind of off on their own. Let's see. They land on the planet. And they, you know, go and look for a place to buy the parts from. And they run into a shop that's got this weird Watto guy and Anakin Skywalker's there also. And it says Watto has the parts. They're in back out back and they want to go look for him. He finds the parts. But Qui-Gon is unable to purchase them because the Republic credits he has are worthless.
Republic credits will be fine.
Yeah, and Watto's like, what are you doing? Republic credits don't work here. You must think you're a Jedi or something. Mind tricks don't work on me. something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just like how he flutters around.
It was a little, yeah.
It's so misplaced.
I noticed too, I noticed this with
Jar Jar. You just smack him like a mosquito or something. Shut up.
Exactly. I noticed if you watch the actors, Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor, if you watch them, especially when Jar Jar's, they're supposed to be interacting with Jar Jar. They're never looking in the right spot.
Yeah.
They're not looking in exactly the right spot because he's not really there. Those are all CGI. The Watto guy and Jar Jar are CGI.
Jar Jar's real.
No. So they find out about Anakin, and he's very gifted with mechanical stuff. There's a sandstorm coming, and they end up. Anakin ends up offering his place to stay to wait out the sandstorm, which apparently doesn't last but a couple hours, I guess. And they find out that he has built a droid named C-3PO, and he doesn't have outside body parts. He's only got inner parts that we can see.
A bunch of
wires and gears.
R2-D2 says, why are you naked?
Yeah, exactly. Why are you naked? I also find out that Anakin has done pod racing before. He's a pilot in pod racing. And this is where Qui-Gon starts to think that this guy is, this Anakin is, got some force capabilities because it takes a lot of concentration to fly a pod racer. And he thinks that he's the chosen one to fulfill prophecies that are supposed to balance the force. And so we see where Qui-Gon brokers a deal with Watto to get Anakin in the pod race. He offers up the ship as collateral for the entering fee, and we also see the Watto wants more, and he offers him some money that he makes off of the sale of the ship and whatever, and he can keep the pod racer when the race is over and make money off of that. Watto's like, hey, what do you get out of this? And he's like, well, I want to I'd like to, you know, get the boy free if I win.
Free the boy and the mom.
Yeah, free them both, he says. And Watu doesn't like that. He says they can only do one of them. And they do a game of chance with some dice that looks like colored with a marker or something. Red and blue.
Yeah.
Red for the or blue for the boy and red for the mother. Mm-hmm. And they roll it, and Qui-Gon does his little Jedi stuff to make it show up blue.
Is that what it's supposed to sound like in the movie?
Yeah.
The force.
Yeah. So basically, if Anakin wins, he gets to be freed. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't, then Watu gets to keep him as a slave. And you know, they get back to Anakin's place, and Qui-Gon is talking to him outside, and he does a blood test on him. Checks his midichlorian, and he contacts Obi-Wan Kenobi. And this is where we find out that
he's off the chart.
20,000 midichlorians per whatever. Highest ever seen of any Jedi. So then we have a long scene where, you know, we're doing the preparing for the pod race. The kids come in, you know, and
that's so wizard.
Yeah, that one kid says that's wizard, and you know, they're preparing for it. They get the engine started and all that stuff. Oh, it's gonna work! Yay, you know. So they cart the ship off, or the pod racer off to the hangar where all the racers are preparing, and this is where we see the Sabula guy that's supposed to be the one that always wins. Mm-hmm. Sabula, he's
a rat.
something like that, but doesn't he have like multiple legs and stuff? He's got like three sets or something like that. I don't know.
Looks like
he's got a lot, sort of something like that. He's got wings too, doesn't he? I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe something. Not. But yeah, so the team joins, this is where, so they race. They do a couple. They're supposed to do three laps, I think, around the race course. And this is where we see a lot of things here. We see Jabba the Hutt, and you know he opens up the race and bites the head off of some sort of rat type of thing or whatever. Spits it at the gong.
It's the head of the gong starts the race.
Gong. Yeah. And we see Anakin have trouble at the beginning. His ship doesn't start or something. It's flooded or whatever it is.
And to call AAA.
Exactly. And there's another guy next to him that has something similar to
that. That was a dork.
Yeah. He's like freaking out or something. Later on, the guy's ship actually does start to work, and the pieces go flying all over the place, or whatever, and explode. So they start the trip around, and there's a caves that they go through. A couple of the pilots crash in the caves. There's a big explosion up the first time through, and they come out, and the Tusken Raiders are firing shots at them. Yep. Choom, choom. They're excited.
They get one, they're jumping down.
Yeah. Which is funny. And they go through the same track two more times. As they go through, some pilots crash, and you know, there's a confrontation with Sabula and Anakin while they're flying around, blah, blah, blah. You know, Anakin has troubles and ends up going falling behind and catches back up, you know, happens like two or three times. And finally, near the end of the last lap, Anakin bounces Sabula, and Sabula crashes and ends up on the ground going, or whatever. He's all upset. And Anakin wins the race. Ta-da!
Yay.
And that takes up a lot of the movie, I thought. But anyway, so they all prepare to leave for Coruscant. You know, this is where, Qui-Gon tells Anakin that he's been freed. And, you know, they talk about that and his mother's.
But Mama! Mama!
He asks her if he can go, and she says, well, that's your decision, not necessarily mine. And stuff like that. What else? This is when Qui-Gon also says that she can't go, like you were saying.
Yeah.
He was only able to free Anakin, because Watu doesn't want that. So, she has to stay, and they, you know, he packs up his stuff. I don't know if you noticed when Anakin was leaving, he had a backpack.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was funny, but that backpack we see at a later time. I think that's a backpack we see.
I think it says Star Wars on it.
Yeah, it probably does. It's got a picture of Yoda on the back of it. They get back to the they start heading back to the ship, and we see a scene with Maul has arrived, and he has sent out some little probe droids to basically figure out where everybody's at. And they return, and he heads off, and he basically is on his way to intercept the ship and, you know, the two Jedi, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. Just as they're getting close to the ship, we see Maul come up behind them, and Qui-Gon says, Anakin, duck.
Goose.
Yeah, duck, goose. He says, duck, and, Maul goes over him and jumps off of his little speeder or whatever he's riding.
He was hauling ass, too.
He was. And they have a little lightsaber duel fight going on there. Zoom, 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 zoom. And
Obi-Wan says, take off, take off.
Yeah. Yeah, they tell him to take off and go low over by where they're fighting at. So maybe Qui-Gon can jump on, which he does. He escapes. And the ship takes off and leaves, Maul going, where'd they go? And so he can't catch them because they escape and go boom into hyperspace. So he's lost them. We talked about Maul. Fight cuts short. Qui-Gon. So they get back on the ship and it takes off on. When they get to Coruscant, Qui-Gon informs the Jedi Council about the mysterious attacker in front of the Council on Tatooine. He talks about it, and they conclude that this attacker has to be a Sith. Dun dun dun. The latter being a religious order whose followers follow the dark side of the Force. Dun, dun, dun. And this is where we hear him say the Sith have been extinct for over a millennium, which is 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Qui-Gon informs him that he's also found Anakin, and asks if he can be trained. The first they're like, no, he can't be trained. They tell him no.
You already have him.
But they agree to do testing to deliberate and see if he's, you know, got powers, and they do that, and they tell Qui-Gon that he's not suitable for training.
Too old.
They fear that his future is clouded, and he has much fear in his mind. So he basically, I think, he tells Qui-Gon that he can't train him. He's not allowed to. But Qui-Gon's allowed to, you know, keep track of him and, you know, take care of him. And they get assigned to go back to, you know, help the queen get away from, you know, everybody. So they go back.
Oh, well, at this point. But also their planet had been invaded.
Yes.
And they were setting up big time and everybody else. And even before they got back, they had that entrapment message from one of the governing people of her planet.
Yeah, they got tracked or whatever. Right. And so we see a scene at the Senate. You know, Palpatine warns her about the corruption and all that. The queen about the corruption. And this is where he mentions that she might call for a vote of no confidence if she doesn't like what the chancellor is saying. So they go in and debate it a little bit, and they complain about the Trade Federation. The Trade Federation denies it, blah, blah, blah. She calls for the no confidence vote of Chancellor Finis Valorum.
Well, that's a pretty good speech, though, that she gave. Well, if you're just going to sit there and put it to council or whatever and study it, why study it when my planet's being invaded right now? Exactly. And then she goes with heavy heart, I vote for no confidence or something like that.
Exactly. And, you know, they retreat back to, you know, whatever place they're staying there on Coruscant. And, you know, Palpatine is there talking about, you know, they have no other alternative, that, you know, he's one of the candidates to become be voted on for the Supreme Chancellor. And she tells Palpatine that she doesn't want to be here anymore to, you know, witness the slowness of politics. She wants to go back to her own planet. Because of, you know, the Senate's lack of action. She feels that even if Palpatine is elected chancellor, it'll be too late for the planet. And this is when the council sends the two Jedis back to the planet with her to find out more about this Sith guy, because they think he's still there, probably waiting for the queen to come back. We get back to the planet, and this is where, you know, we see on the way there, there's discussion about you know, what they're going to do, what she's going to do. And this is when Jar Jar kind of lets...
Well, they're not back to the planet yet. He's sitting there looking at the ship and go, well, we are mighty warriors. We have a big army.
He lets go that they have a huge army, which apparently the queen had no idea. They're big warriors and, you know how to fight and all that stuff. So when they land, she says that she needs to contact the Gungans, which is, you know, the water Jar Jar's people. And Jar Jar goes down to the lake to get a hold of somebody. And he goes down there and comes back and he says, the place is abandoned. Oh, no. What are we going to do?
They're not there. They're not there. No.
So
Jedi asked, well, where would they be?
Yeah, exactly.
A
Gungan sacred palace. It's certain that Gungans would go there if they're in trouble or something. So they go to this place and find Boss Nass. And the Gungans don't really start to trust her, and then this is where we get the reveal that the handmaiden Padme is actually the true queen and not the person that's impersonating her, which is actually one of her handmaidens for security reasons or whatever. And they form an alliance with Boss Nass and come up with a big plan to fight off the attack by the Trade Federation.
Yay!
Dispute plan. And they're sent off some people to rescue some crew. This is where the queen tells Qui-Gon about the battle plan. The Gungan army is going to distract the main forces while they go and infiltrate the palace and everything through a secret entrance inside of one of the waterfalls. This is where we see that Newt Gungray contacts Darth Sidious and tells him that they're gonna wipe out the Gungans with their battle forces. We see, in the battlefield, everybody's setting up, and Jar Jar gets made a captain. Oh boy,
whatever. No, made a general, a bombardment.
There you go, a bombard general or something like that.
General a bombard.
Yeah. And they have a shield of some sort that they use. So during the battle, the droids are firing from a distance and they can't penetrate the shield. So that's when they decide to dispatch all the little end up calling clankers later on in the show, those little individual droids. They activate a shield, fire some tanks. Tanks can't get through. So they send in the actual droids, and the droids are able to walk through the generator. And heavy casualties start to ensue.
It's the same theory as throwing grenade under the shield of a
right
of one of the battle droids.
Exactly, we saw that quite a bit in some of the animated shows where they would do that. And we see in the hangar bay, Darth Maul shows up and fights the two Jedis while the others escape to, back up the main battlefield with fighters.
Where's Annie? Where's Annie?
He this is when Qui-Gon tells him to get up in a fighter and mm-hmm. stay there stay and keep the out of the way.
No matter what.
Yeah, exactly. No matter. Don't leave.
Don't leave. Okay.
Keep your head down. And these guys end up, battling Maul, and they end up going down a hallway that has a bunch of catwalks, and it's through the generator area that has some, weird force field things going on and stuff that they can't get through every once in a while. They end up fighting. Zoom, 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 wow, wow. The force field things come down, and there's a time when they wait a few seconds for the force fields to go away so they can go through it, continue through. We see Qui-Gon meditating, and Darth Maul is very anxious to go through. He's pacing. And Obi-Wan Kenobi's in the back. He's anxious too. He can't meditate like Qui-Gon can.
He's a youngin'.
Exactly. And this is where we get a battle between the two of them are fighting them all for a little while. We get to see the double blade thing go on with Maul's lightsaber. yes, the fields, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And there's a big fight, and before Kenobi can get through, he has to wait for a while, and he actually sees Qui-Gon get mortally wounded. Whoa. And falls down. And he's like, no! And then the shield comes up, and he starts to fight with Maul himself.
Much bigger.
Yeah, this is where we see him chop the lightsaber in half. So Maul now has two individual sabers. I think one of them doesn't actually work, so he's only got one that actually has the blade. And he knocks Kenobi over the edge and kicks his lightsaber over the edge with him. And we see Kenobi, reaching his hands up there, and Maul's trying to goad him to get out so that he can, kill him, because he has no choice but to jump into the pit and die, or come up there and get out. So Maul is trying to get him to get out, and eventually Kenobi does. He actually, uses his force powers to grab the lightsaber of Qui-Gon and begins fighting Maul again. And he ends up cutting Maul in half, right through the stomach.
And Maul falls down the pit.
He falls down the pit. We see him falling, and we see two different pieces of him falling down the pit, which is a pretty cool little shot. But it's a pretty lengthy fight scene there. It was a pretty good fight scene, I thought. And not long after Maul falls down the shaft, Obi-Wan goes over to Qui-Gon and talks to him a few moments before Qui-Gon dies. This is where he tells Obi-Wan that he has to train Anakin. He's the chosen one, and he believes it strongly, and that he wants Obi-Wan to carry out his wishes. Then we find out, obviously Qui-Gon dies, and we go back to the queen and everything. The Gungans eventually, once the battle's been going on, there's something up aboard that Anakin ends up being sent with the fighter ship that he's on. He ends up being automatic pilot, sends him to the main ship for the droids, right? Sure. And he ends up getting inside a hangar in there with his ship and ends up firing all kinds of things. And there's actually a some sort of power generator in the hangar.
The communication ship for the droids.
Right. So he hits his power generator, right, and the ship starts to explode from the inside. And we see some of the Naboo fighter pilots going, "Hey, the ship's exploding from the inside. What's going on? We don't have anybody in there." And then they see Anakin coming out the side of...
He did it.
That's Anakin. What's he doing? He did it. He blew up the ship. And as the ship explodes, the droids on the planet, no communication, so they kind of fall down dead. Which means the Gungans have won the battle.
Yeah, what's funny is that Annie tells R2, "Get this thing off of autopilot."
Exactly. Exactly. That's when he was coming into the hangar the first time. He says, "Get this thing off autopilot. I can't get it off." Eventually R2 does, of course, and that's when he's able to get back out of the ship in time before it explodes. And he gets back to the Naboo hangar, and everybody's celebrating and excited because he is the hero of the day. Um, Gunray, Queen Amidala is declares victory, and Newt Gunray is going to stand for trial for all his crimes. And we find out that Chancellor Palpatine has been elected the new Supreme Chancellor of the Senate. And we see later in a room, Yoda confers with Obi-Wan on the and gives Obi-Wan the rank of Jedi Knight. And Kenobi argues with Yoda about the promise that Qui-Gon and about training Anakin. And Yoda is convinced eventually, but it's dangerous to train the boy. But the council lets him train him. So Anakin becomes the apprentice of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yay!
We have a little scene where they cremate Qui-Gon's body, in the temple, and Mace Windu is there, Yoda's there, of the council is there. Go ahead.
So, why didn't his body just disappear after he was dead?
Because. they hadn't invented that yet, but that's
because... Oh, they hadn't invented that yet, so they're okay.
So Qui-Gon actually is the first one, you'll find out in the second movie. Qui-Gon is the first one that has been able to what they call be able to transpire the barrier between death and life as a ghost or whatever. So he hasn't actually done that yet. That's why his body doesn't disappear. If you're trained in that, it does that. Kind of like, we saw that with same thing happened with Darth Vader. His body disappeared.
So did Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan's body disappeared because he trained in it. We saw that in the Revenge of the Sith. We saw in Revenge of the Sith where... Yoda tells him that he's got some training for him to do, Obi-Wan, while he's in his isolation. That's the training for the ghost thing that he's talking about. So it doesn't actually happen, and it's not really, this ghost thing is not really thought of, I think is what the deal was. George Lucas hadn't thought of it yet, I think. Master and Apprentice, those two... the council talks about while they're at the ceremony that there's never only one Sith, there's always two, a master and an apprentice. So they need to find out who that master is.
I know.
They also throw out the idea that we know him as Darth Maul. This Maul guy could actually be the master. They don't know at the time. So, and we do know who the master is because we see him throughout the movie giving orders and stuff, right? Giving orders to Darth Maul.
You have to watch that one. You have to watch you, Annie.
Yeah. And that's funny because at the same ceremony of the of Qui-Gon, they the senator's there and he says that he's going to be watching his career because he congratulates him for helping win the battle. I look forward to watching your career is what he says or something like that. And we see. They organize a big victory celebration as the last scene here, and we see the Naboo and the Gungans are celebrating in the streets, and there's a presentation where they give Boss Nass a big crystal thing or something that glows, and we see the first time we see Obi-Wan and Anakin is dressed in the Jedi clothes, and he's got the little ponytail thing that, you know, the braided ponytail thing.
Retarded.
It's supposed to mark that they're a Jedi Padawan. Uh-huh. So that it ends with that scene there where they're, you know, giving the presentation to the boss, and we get, you know, boss doing another thing because he's excited or something or whatever, and that's when the credits roll. So, you know, to your point, my question of the week is, was Chancellor Palpatine always watching Anakin? Even before the moments that happened in this movie, was he watching Anakin before that?
Yes.
You think so?
He had to know him, the boy.
He probably did. So I asked the question because I think he was too. And I say that because there's actually a book that I'm starting to read that's called, remember when Palpatine tells the story about Darth Plagueis the Wise?
Mm-hmm. His master.
So yeah. This book is actually called Darth Plagueis the Wise, and it goes through Plagueis from the beginning, and then Palpatine as his apprentice, and so on and so on. And it's very interesting. I haven't gotten very far into it at all, but the synopsis of the story is that Darth Plagueis actually planned everything that happens throughout the entire movie series. Plagueis actually is the mastermind of everything, and Palpatine, as we know, kills Plagueis to be the one that takes over. So Plagueis trains Palpatine to be a senator in politics and everything. He trains him so he can infiltrate the Senate and take over the political side. Since Palpatine ends up killing Plagueis, Palpatine is also the Sith Lord that's in charge of everything, right? So we're gonna talk about this book later on, but it's very interesting because there's mention in the book about how Anakin came to be. Because in the movie, his mom explains it that she doesn't know what happened.
She turned up Prego.
Yeah, and she, you know, took care of him and gave birth and all that stuff. She turned up Prego, but she doesn't know what happened.
Damn, night in the club with the roofie.
Yeah, exactly. So this book explains how Anakin came to be also. And probably how he came to have such a high midichlorian count too. Because Darth Plagueis was obsessed with midichlorians. Mm-hmm. His main focus was to control and do as much as possible with midichlorians. And I think the book, I'll find out that they figured out how to control them enough to concentrate them, so that they could get, have Anakin have this high of a midichlorian content. Anyway, that's what I think about that. So,
feedback@kylejohansen.us. That's feedback. KYLEJOHANSEN.US.
Feedback. So that's the movie, Scott. What do you think about the movie? That's
pretty cool.
It's a pretty good movie, and I don't know, Scott. He just did.
Everybody talks about and wonders why he did it backwards. But now we just, if you think about it, you're reading a book that'll tell you why he did it backwards.
Part of it. I mean, so there's a couple, what do they call those? You know, those movies where they talk about how they made the movies kind of thing. Documentaries and stuff. And there's one where Lucas kind of explains it too. And in that he says, He wanted to do 4, 5, and 6 first because it involved a lot of the, you know, the battles. Mm-hmm. And the first three don't really involve a lot of battles, which they do because he realized that that's where he's going to make the money from. So he put battles in them all. But
yeah,
originally they didn't.
He stuck you in first with the good stuff.
Yeah. The originally the you know, Phantom Menace and you know, the other two movies weren't going to have a lot of fighting and stuff in them. They were going to be content based, but not a lot of, you know, the love story of Anakin, the, you know, the, that stuff, and not a lot of fighting in them. But he added the fighting because he knew that that would draw the audiences as well. So he could make enough money to make the next movie and the next movie. Right. So, that's originally why he did it that way. Cause he thought if he released episode 1 first, people would not watch the second one after that. So he thought that, you know, the big battle between Luke Skywalker and all that stuff would be what would get people to come back and watch more. And this Darth Plagueis also kind of explains that too. But yeah. So anyway, there's a lot of people that complain about this movie and how, you know, the pod race thing was kind of stupid and all that stuff. But I thought it was pretty good in the movie. Didn't mm-hmm. you think it was?
Yeah.
Anything else you got opinions on? We need everyone to send us feedback. You know that.
Yeah, feedback.
Lots of feedback. Again, we have no feedback, of course. We still have about 5 people subscribed to us through Google Podcasts. We've had about 20 different attempts to see our website this week. No feedback, like I said. No answers to any of our questions of the week, which I'd like, you know, this week I think we got a pretty good... Yeah, we got a pretty good question this week. Spotify, we still have 3 people that are following us and watch regularly listening to our show. Apple, we don't have anybody following us. I don't know why. That's about it. So, yeah. So, going forward, we're going to be doing... the next 2 prequel movies. We'll be doing 1 of them each weekend, hopefully. And
next weekend we skip, unless we do it on Sunday. You want to do it on Sunday?
Sunday's fine with me, too. I don't care.
Okay. Sunday will be fine.
So we want to do episode 2 and 3, and then if we have time, we want to watch New Hope, too. So we're going to, hopefully, yeah. There's enough weekends there. It just depends on if we have time and stuff, because things are going to be coming up pretty quick, I'm sure, for both of us. So that's the plan going forward. Hopefully next time we'll have some better handle on the audio stuff so we can, you know, say goodbye and whatever.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room Podcast. Please visit our website where you can play current and past episodes. That's https://rabr.kylejohansson.us. That's rabr.kylejohansson.us. On the left-hand side is a navigation menu. You can use this to learn how to load the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room podcast on your Android or Apple phone and tablet. And we have direct links to our podcast on Apple and Google Podcasts. Please participate by connecting to our social media, answering questions of the week, or submitting feedback directly from the site. Again, all of these are available at the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room website at rabr.kylejohansson.us. This podcast in no way is approved, sponsored, or owned by Lucasfilms Ltd., Disney, Disney Plus, or any of its subsidiaries. All opinions are solely owned by Kyle and or Scott, and in no way express the views or opinions of their past or present employers. Views and opinions are not supported or restricted by Lucasfilms, Ltd., Disney, Disney Plus, or any of its subsidiaries. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or any or other use of this podcast and its affiliate sites without consent of Super Duper Podcast Network and its host is prohibited. I am Kyle John Johansson, and this is Andrew Scott Sutton. Say goodbye now.
Everybody. Wave bye, Scott. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Don't look at Scott's house. He needs to paint it.